Reasons for not believing the doctrine of total hereditary depravity. First, if this doctrine be admitted as true, then it must be admitted that the worst of the unregenerate are as good as the best. The Baptist Creed declares that by Adam's first sin we were made opposite to all good and wholly inclined to all evil. And the Presbyterian says that our whole nature was corrupted by this sin. This, then, according to these creeds, is the natural condition of every unregenerate man. Now, if this is true, is not every unregenerate man as bad as Satan? Reader, you must either deny this doctrine of the creeds or admit that all unregenerate men are as bad as the devil. Yes, mothers, those smiling babies which with delight so exquisite you press to your fond and sympathizing bosoms are, according to these creeds, wholly corrupt and wholly inclined to all evil. Except you can imagine some person to exist who is more than wholly inclined to all evil, you cannot imagine any person to exist who is worse than these creeds represent your babies to be. Are you prepared for this? Can you look on the face of your child and then, with a good conscience, subscribe a creed which contains so monstrous a doctrine? We are astonished that rational men ever admitted so uncouth an absurdity. What? Must we look upon our unregenerate friends, relatives, and neighbors as wholly inclined to all evil? Must the husband consider his kind, his affectionate, his gracious, though unregenerate wife as a devil incarnate? Rather would we say that among the unregenerate there is a great diversity of dispositions and characters. Not more numerous are the tints in nature than are the shades of human character. It is probable that no two children have ever been born into the world with precisely the same disposition. Their dispositions probably differ as much as do their countenances, which could not be were they all wholly inclined to all evil, for then the dispositions of all of them would be precisely alike, that is, totally depraved. That all unregenerate men are not equally and consequently not totally depraved or wholly inclined to all evil we will now prove from the Scriptures by a few out of the many passages which might be adduced. Paul says that evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse. Now, it must be admitted that evil men and seducers are unregenerate men. How then can these men, by nature totally depraved, become worse and worse? Worse than totally depraved? Worse than wholly inclined to all evil? Impossible. Every reader who is not blind can certainly perceive that if bad men can become worse, they are not by nature totally depraved. But we have other proofs to the point. And the Lord said, Thy people, meaning the Jewish nation, which thou hast brought forth out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verse 12. Moses says that they have corrupted themselves. Their spot is not the spot of his children. Deuteronomy 32 verse 5. But more fully to the point is the following declaration from the mouth of Moses. For I know that after my death you will utterly corrupt yourselves. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 29. Need we inform the reader that Moses certainly did not consider the Jewish nation as utterly corrupt at the time in which he spoke these words? He charges them with corrupting themselves, and evidently supposes them to be in a state of progressive corruption, which would eventuate in utter or total corruption after his death. Like the evil men and seducers of Paul, they were waxing worse and worse, and might finally become totally depraved. If the reader is not yet convinced, we will give him one more testimony which we think irresistible. Thou also, which hast judged thy sisters, Sodom and Samaria, bear thine own shame, for thy sins that thou hast committed are more abominable than they are more righteous than thou. Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 52. Now, gentle reader, if this testimony does not convince you that all unregenerate men are not totally depraved and that some unregenerate men are worse than others, we shall despair of ever convincing you of anything. We shall recommend medicine or a physician as more suitable to your complaint than testimony. The unregenerate Sodomites were more righteous than the Jews? Except one mass of total corruption can be more righteous than another, the Sodomites were not totally corrupt. and if the unregenerate Sodomites were not totally corrupt, the doctrine of total hereditary depravity is false. Second, we do not believe the doctrine of total hereditary depravity because we do know that man is a rational being. The scriptures speak of the reason of man, the reason of God, and of the Christian religion as possessing congenial principles. Come now, says God to man, and let us reason together. The result of this reasoning was to be the cancelling of the sins of the man who would reason with his Maker. Though your sins be like scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they be red as crimson, they shall be as wool. Men, by acting reasonably, do not act in opposition to God. The reason of God is the highest reason in the universe and is, insofar as revelation has made it known, a guide for the exercise of our reason. When the reason of man, which may be denominated the mind's eye, is illuminated by the revelation which has proceeded from the reason of God, and our soul, body, and spirit are actuated and controlled by the rays of this celestial light, we become imitators of God. Under no other circumstances can we be said to act reasonably. Obedience to this revelation is hence declared to be our reasonable service. Romans chapter 12. Hence also it is said that Paul reasoned with Felix. The exercises of Paul's mind as well as the articulations of his organs of speech were legitimate productions of God's own revelations and therefore rational exercises, things which they could not have been had they been in any measure counter to the dictates of the divine reason. If, however, the reason of man is totally depraved, if it is a mere satanic germ, if it is not that noble principle which we have just represented it to be, how has it come to pass that its legitimate exercises are so entirely compatible with the exercises of the divine reason? If the reason of unregenerate man is wholly depraved, would not its legitimate exercises be open and eternal rebellion against God? If the reason of man is totally depraved, then while ever he acts in conformity with it, he must act counter to the reason of God. There must in this case be a fearful discordance between human and divine reason. If then this discordance really exists, man, in order to act compatibly with divine reason, must act counter to his own. Paul, therefore, ought to have prayed to be delivered from reasonable and wicked men rather than unreasonable and wicked men, and the Christian religion ought to have been denominated our unreasonable service. But that the exercise of the reason of unregenerate men is not rebellion against God is evident from the words of Paul in which he prayed to be delivered from unreasonable and wicked men. These men were, it seems, wicked because they were unreasonable, refused to render to God their reasonable service. Therefore, it is as clear as demonstration that the reason of man, except he be an insane person, is not by nature totally depraved. And if not, then human nature is not totally depraved. It has been well said by a writer of celebrity that no man is against reason until he finds that reason is against him. Even the Roman Catholics appeal to reason when it favors or seems to favor their doctrines. But when they attempt to prove transubstantiation, reason is divorced and carnalized, because it cannot be made to bow to and reverence this monstrous dogma. So it is with many others. They repudiate reason only when it raises its faithful voice against their absurdities. Did I say absurdities? Yes. What absurdity is greater or more irrational than that a priest, a sinful man, holds Jesus Christ between his fingers and a wafer, perhaps only equaled by the more popular absurdity that all men are by nature wholly corrupt, but yet that some are more corrupt than others? And to this absurdity permit us to add another, that men who are totally corrupt may become worse and worse. Paul, in writing to the Ephesians, says, "The eyes of your understanding being enlightened." That which is called the soul's eye, and sometimes the discursive faculty, is here called the eyes of your understanding. The gospel was the light by which this eye was illuminated, and was as well adapted to this moral and mental organ as physical light is to our natural eye. Hence it became a medium through which they saw or understood the things of God. But had this I been dead, that is, blind by nature, of what benefit could the light have been to them? We learn from the testimony of Jesus Christ that the Jews, in order to avoid seeing when the truth was presented to them, resorted to an astonishing expedient. It was just this: they shut their eyes. Yes, Jesus said, "Your eyes ye have closed, lest ye should be converted." But if their eyes were dead, they could have seen as well with them shut as open. We do not intend to deny that men, by long continuance in the practice of wickedness, may render their mental eye unfit for the reception of moral light. We do in fact believe this doctrine. We think that the mental as well as the physical eye may become blind. This, however, is not its natural condition, except where persons are born in a state of mental incapacity. We conclude, therefore, that as men are reasonable beings, and as the faculty of reason is an attribute in the exercise of which we imitate God and render Him our services, those who are possessed of this attribute are not the subjects of total hereditary depravity. Third, we do not believe the doctrine of total hereditary depravity because unregenerate men are capable of the exercise of conscience. We will present but two passages out of the many in proof of this point. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2, Paul says, "having their conscience seared with a hot iron." Then in Romans chapter 2, verse 15, he says, "their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another." We shall not attempt to argue this question metaphysically. That men have a conscience from a very early period of their lives is a fact which requires no other proof than every man's own consciousness. We have indeed seen one man, and but one, who informed us that he had never felt one compunctious throb for any of his evil doings. But we did not believe him. Had we believed him, we should have viewed him as a monster. We think also that we do not mistake when we say that those persons who are unhackneyed in the ways of vice are more tender in conscience and more capable of its vigorous exercise than our older and more hardened sinners, and that correct information or knowledge of the truth is also a prerequisite to its healthful and vigorous exercise. The Gentiles who had not the law had, nevertheless, some knowledge of good and evil. And if any of them were for the most part destitute of this knowledge, we have a reason for it in the first chapter of Romans. Paul says, "For when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. And as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them up," etc. In proportion to the true knowledge which they possessed was the ability with which their conscience was endowed to be a faithful witness. But if, not liking to retain God in their knowledge, they persisted in refusing to hearken to this inward monitor, it became seared with a hot iron, its remonstrances were hushed, and its unhappy subjects given over to a hard heart and a reprobate mind. Nothing is more certain, we think, than that young persons, when they begin to run into the criminal excesses of the baser sort of men, experience the most exquisite twinges of conscience. Twinges which, after hardening themselves in crime, they never again experience. But on the supposition that the doctrine of total hereditary depravity is true, these things could not be so. If all men are by nature totally depraved, can the heart be hardened? Can the conscience be seared? Upon the hypothesis of total hereditary depravity, is not the heart and conscience of the novice in sin as much depraved as are the heart and conscience of the veriest reprobate? If the creeds are true, are not all unregenerate men from their birth wholly corrupt and inclined to evil continually? Where, then, shall we find in unregenerate men those conscientious throbbings, those deep convictions, those midnight sighings which perhaps all unregenerate men have felt? Does not the existence of these feelings and emotions indicate the existence of something in the nature of man which is not wholly corrupt? In what does conscience inhere? Where is its substratum? On what foundation does it stand? What is that which feels so acutely, which aches so horribly, if the whole nature of man is morally dead? Does conscience grasp mere rottenness and corruption, and make it feel horror and remorse in the contemplation of sin, when the whole man is but sin personified? Impossible. If the doctrine of total native depravity were true, instead of feeling remorse for sin, we should thirst after it incessantly, and that too with intense and irresistible desire. And sin would be so congenial with our whole nature that in no part of it could there be any repugnance to sin, and consequently there could be no conscience. Paul says in Acts chapter 23, verse 1, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." The apostle here refers to the whole of his past life. Now, if Paul, anterior to his conversion, was totally depraved, how could he have had a good conscience? Again, can total sinfulness feel remorse? Can a totally wicked or depraved conscience rebuke a sinner for his wickedness? Surely this would be the devil chiding sin. Surely this would be Satan divided against himself. Suppose, if you please, a person to have so far depraved himself as to be past feeling. Would this man be more than totally depraved? You answer in the negative. Well, then, it follows irresistibly that those who are not yet past feeling, whose conscience is not totally seared, are not yet totally depraved.